You may not love them at that point in time, but you made the decision to make the commitment to be in a marriage as opposed to actually going through the divorce, which is 10 times harder. Once you take the uniform off, the job it stays at the job. When you come home, then you need to become a person again for the people who are depending on you. And you got to be available almost at a moment's notice when it comes to your family. And sometimes we don't have that switch. And when that switch does not go off, then that tension starts to build right there. And most times the spouses don't grow to hate each other. They just want to break free of the tension that is built up between the two of them. When I went through counseling, it was the best thing that I've ever done. I was upset with myself because I didn't go sooner.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my guest co-host, Laura Hansen. I'm David Dashinger. By way of intro, Laura is a former SWAT operator. She's an author, certified high-performance coach, and a wellness coordinator with the Virginia State Police. So welcome, Laura, to hosting Respond to Resilience.
Thanks, David. I'm excited to be here today.
On this episode, we'll be speaking with Clee Tillman. He's a podcast host of Black and Blue. He's also a law enforcement officer, and we'll be speaking about first responders and divorce, the high-stress nature of our jobs combined with the irregular schedules and long hours that can put a strain on even the strongest of marriages. Remember to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, and all the podcast platforms. And check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Clee after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW EMTB.
And today we're joined by Clee Tillman. He's the host of the Black and Blue podcast, and he's a law enforcement officer. As a former Army paratrooper and rigger, Clee furthered his skills by successfully completing the police academy and embarking on a fulfilling career as a full-time police officer. He proudly serves in the police department of his hometown, where he grew up and attended school. And alongside his law enforcement duties, he's also ventured into various creative endeavors, including authoring 5 books and hosting a weekly live broadcast, Black and Blue. Clee, warm welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Hey, thank you. Thank you guys for having me on here. I appreciate that welcome. That was wonderful.
Well, Laura, I'll let you kick off the first question and we'll get this conversation going.
Yeah, so Clee, I'm super excited you're here. You. The first thing I want to get into is, you know, what inspired you to get into law enforcement? I know it's a kind of a common question, but also it sets that, establishes that baseline for the listeners to know what's your story, what brought you here with the rest of us.
Gotcha. That's one of my most favorite questions. So thank you for asking. I got into law enforcement. I caught the bug when I was about 4 years old. I knew I was going to be a police officer. Then I'm a second generation police officer. My dad was a police officer. So once I learned exactly how cool the uniforms were, how fast the cars went, I was sold then. And then as I grew older, learning actually to be of service, to give back to my community, to give back to people in need, it was a wonderful thing. And then to come to a job where you typically don't do the same thing every day, and to be able to help people was just amazing in itself. So I was like, yeah, I'm sold. Let me get to the academy as soon as I can and get this done. The only thing that I did not understand or know at that time was I did not like to do a lot of paperwork. And I said, that'll be easy. I'll just become a cop, so I don't have to do a bunch of paperwork. And I was wrong about that one.
Yeah, more work you do, the more paperwork there is.
Yeah. I fell short on that one.
I'd love to ask you this question. And before we get into the topic of divorce, and that's,
Sure.
See, working in a town where you grew up, how does that mm-hmm. dynamic come into play when you're responding to calls and maybe you know the people or you're very familiar with the family or situation? How does that change doing the job for you?
For me, initially, it was nerve wracking for me. I wasn't to actually go to someone's house or respond to a call and know the person. It was like, oh, I know them, or I've grew up with their kids, or I grew up with them. It was kind of nerve wracking. I didn't want to do it. It did not sit well with me. But the more that I got honed in on this job, the more that I know the community. I grew up in the community. I know the area and I know the families. It actually worked to my benefit because people would feel more comfortable when they saw me there, people that I knew, or they knew of me and I didn't even know them. And they said, oh, Clee, I'm glad it's you for this accident. I feel so much better. I'm like, the rest of my department can handle it probably 10 times better than I can. But just for them to see a familiar face, have a familiar name, makes it so much better for them and me, because I remember solving a lot of cases as well, or helping our CI solve a lot of cases. When individuals would tip me off, I'd get emails, phone calls, or just face to face, like, hey, this incident that took place last Saturday at noon, you might want to check out such and such location for X, Y, and Z. And I would pass that information off. And then there you go, a case solved. And it would just because of word of mouth, and people felt comfortable and trusting enough to come to me. And it's a good feeling.
Absolutely. And yeah, you reminded me of another situation where I worked in a department where some of the people grew up in that town, and we had a really bad hurricane, trees down. Mm-hmm. And it was an EMS call to a house mm-hmm. which was inaccessible through any public road. One of the guys who grew up in the town happened to know of a cut through that only, you know, if you were a townie, you would know. And he was able to get the ambulance backed up through there to get the access to the patient. So, I guess it's kind of priceless when you have that kind of experience mm-hmm. with a town growing up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that trust building is so important, and really building on that. You know, you have that ability to be in that community that you grew up in, but you're mm-hmm. continuing to build on it, and you're not just taking it for what it is. And that's inspiring for other people to hear too, is what they can do when they have that community trust, and how much easier the job can get too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like I said, when I first became a police officer here, I was nervous because I was still younger minded. As a novice officer. And so I would deal with a lot of individuals that I respected or looked up to. As if I'll give an example, when I went back to my old high school, some of my former teachers were still there, but I was there as a professional in a work capacity, and calling them Mr. Smith as opposed to, hey, Bob, it did not sit well with me. And they would introduce themselves as Bob. No, I just can't do it. And they would have conversations, and we would be talking, and it would be, for me, it would be like student teacher as opposed to two adults having a conversation, trying to come up with a solution. It was surreal.
I bet. Well, let's shift gears. Laura, why don't you get us started with the topic of divorce? Where should we start?
Well, I think a good place to start is, why do you think divorce rates are so high among first responders and law enforcement officers?
I believe they're so high because of the type of job that we do. Most of us work shift work, we work holidays, we work weekends, sometimes day, we're rotating schedule days, nights, no matter what, if it's first responder, law enforcement, 12 hour days, 10 hour days, whatever the shifts are, you get called out. You see a lot of trauma. And with the first responder community, we embrace the trauma and suck it all in because we're the fixers. We're not the ones that need fixed, or so we think. So therefore, since we absorb all that, we come home and we don't know how to properly process it, or we unpack it improperly and we take it out on our quote unquote loved ones, and they become the punching bag, and it rises. It causes divorce to rise to about 75% more than what the average person may go through.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit, and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fire ground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fire ground.
It's interesting what you said about being fixers in the profession, because in a relationship, I've never experienced a lot of joy when someone's trying to fix me, you know, my partner trying to fix me. So how do you think that plays a toll in the way, you know, first responders communicate when they go home and their spouse or significant other or even child has a problem?
It's interesting enough, the individuals that I've coached or have talked to dealing with their spouses or their children, it's kind of like it's either one, standoffish because they deal with it so much at work that they don't want to deal with certain problems at home. Or if it's not standoffish, then it's overly done, as opposed to the children didn't clean their room correctly. And so they're on punishment for what would normally be maybe an hour or something. They'd be on punishment for the entire weekend for something minor. And it would it'd be one end of the spectrum or the other, and it would grow to the point where communication would stop. It'd be a terrible home environment. And most times the spouses don't grow to hate each other. They just want to break free of the toxic tension is the word I'm trying to think of, the tension that is built up between the two of them. If that answers your question.
It does. Cause you know, it makes me wonder whether or not it becomes more of a routine on how to respond rather than an intentional, you know, presence in the moment to say what's happening in front of me. What is this person saying? Who is this person to me? What is my role versus that autopilot response of, well, this is how it goes when I'm at work. Somebody violated the law. This is what I take action. Yeah. There's consequences for the action. You will serve your time.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of the way you put it, it's kind of like sports. If you like sports, it's pretty black and white. It's cut and dry. Crime happens, you can affect it. When you come home, I know police work and law enforcement, I'm sorry, and first responders, there's a lot of gray areas too, but there's a lot of black and white as well. And when you come home, there's a lot of gray areas that you got to kind of meander through and kind of, sometimes you have to be the listener. Sometimes you have to be the authoritative person. Sometimes you got to plan things. Sometimes you got to go along with things, and you got to be available almost at a moment's notice when it comes to your family. And sometimes we don't have that switch. And when that switch does not go off, then that tension starts to build right there.
I would love to dive into that a little bit deeper. We've definitely touched on this before with the dynamic of a responder coming home from a shift and them having to shift gears from they've been out there saving lives or in these really, you know, dramatic life or death situations or seeing things that most people don't see normally. And they're walking in the front door. And if they don't have a routine to like decompress and shift into the, you know, their home life, that can be create tension. I've certainly experienced that myself. What are your thoughts about ways that married people or the responder themselves can de-escalate their, you know, high energy, high intensity from coming off shift, coming home, and then, you know, adapting to that reality?
Yeah. Of course, the certain things you can do in the moment, that's when you come off shift, is not walk in the house immediately. I know for me, even if I pull up into the driveway, I like to take 5-10 minutes just to decompress. Breathing techniques, in through your nose for 4 seconds, holding the pit of your stomach out through your mouth for 4 seconds as well. Do that 4 times. It kind of resets your mind and your body. Things like that, getting reset, understanding that, you know, once you take the uniform off, you know, that the job stays at the job when you come home, then you need to become a person again for the people who are depending on you. That would be short term. Long term, definitely. And I've learned this the hard way, and I give this advice as well. You suggest marriage counseling, you suggest finding ways of communication, better ways of communication. I say fix yourself first. You know, you go, you talk to whatever counselor you need to talk to, talk whatever friend, talk with whatever mentor that you may have. Get a lot of those things out that you may not be able to want to have a conversation with your spouse or not, but just work on yourself, become your self-actualized person, and you will actually be a better person for everyone else because you're actually enjoying being who you are and decompressing issues that may be traumatic.
That's a really excellent point. I'm hearing a lot of wellness practices when you're talking about all that breathing in and breathing out. So I'm already a huge fan of hearing that. But you know, something else that you mentioned is going home and being there for the ones who depend on you. And you know, at work, we constantly go to these calls and people are depending on us, but it's almost like a shift, right? Because at work, we have to be there and we have to respond. But when we go home, I'm just going to assume that nobody was forced into the marriage, and it should be something that we want to be a part of and should be inserting, you know, some creativity and more love and, you know, looking for ways of growth there versus feeling like it's an obligation. I just wanted to know if you were kind of thinking a similar thing or what your thoughts were on that.
Yes, a lot of similarities, a few differences as well. Getting into a marriage initially, of course, spouse, or two individuals get together, they become spouses. Yes, in this agreement, it's a state contract. You guys are indebted to each other, a life of raising children, life of being together till death do you part. Love is a part of it, but love is also a feeling that kind of inflates and weans because there's going to be times in the marriage where you may not even like the spouse, that you may not even want to be around that individual. You may not love them at that point in time, but you made the deal, you made the contract, you made the decision to make the commitment to be in the marriage as opposed to actually going through the divorce, which is 10 times harder mentally, physically, and stressfully. But I don't like to use, me personally, in the coaching I do, I don't use the word love for marriage because it cycles. You do have love for the person, but I don't think you're constantly in love throughout the entire marriage, if that makes sense. Not saying that things are always, put it this way. Things aren't always a bed of roses. There are going to be hard times. And through those hard times, once the two of you decide to work things out properly and discuss things and work on yourselves, then you know the feelings do come back or do re-engage, if that makes sense. I know I'm kind of talking in circles.
No, absolutely. I appreciate you going into more depth and giving me some more clarity on what your viewpoint was on that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's carry this this thread a little further. Let's say, and maybe you've done this, Klee, you're teaching a group of recruits at the academy, and you're doing a little talk on marriage and what to be aware of, what things to know before you commit to that legal and loving relationship. What would you tell your recruit class?
So I am not against marriage at all. I think it's a wonderful institution. I think it helps move society and communities forward 100%. I would say know exactly what you're getting into. And by saying that, I paint the picture the other way. I start with divorce and let you know, okay, if you go through divorce, this is the process that you're going to go through. So therefore make your selection more open-mindedly, make it more logically as well. So you're not just going based on a feeling and then you go through an expensive marriage that you'll be paying for potentially for 3 to 5 years. If you go through those big weddings, most marriages now last about 3 to 5 years. So once you get done paying that paying off that wedding, then you're going through a divorce, which is going to last for 3 to 5 years potentially as well, where you're going to have to pay attorney fees, alimony, so many different things. So understand once you start this state contract, the ball starts rolling. Okay. We're seeing stars like Lou Ferrigno, Kevin Costner, Sly Stallone, Tom Brady, like Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates are all going through some sort of divorce process. And it's because it's I think it's been popularized now. And unfortunately, it's been taking a hit on our families. It's been taking a hit on our community as first responders. First responders are now, whether you know it or not, you have more than one target on your back. Most first responders are blue collar workers where we make more than what the average person thinks we make. And so, therefore, we're committed to our occupation. We're committed to service. We're committed to making that money. And they know, the family court system knows, that you will be one to have a target. When I say that, I'm saying once you go through divorce, the family court system, for one, you're going to have to hire attorneys. Attorneys are going to stretch things out for as long as possible so they can make their money. The family court system is going to stretch things out, too. They get a kickback with it. The judges get a kickback with the family court system as well through child support if you have children. Child support is going to last anywhere from 18 years to however old the child may be once the divorce actually goes through. So be prepared to start paying for attorney fees. Be prepared to start paying for alimony. Be prepared to start paying spousal support. Be prepared to start paying child support. Things, they'll start chipping at you. Not only that, once you start going through a divorce, you're still expected to perform at work. And when you're performing at work, you're going to be split in half of what's going on the division of your family and also what's going on at work. And you're still going to have to maintain a safe environment and perform and work with your team, platoon, what your workmates, and make sure that they're okay too. Going through that process is a daunting process. It's not fun. Most times, most guys that I talked to felt like that they were alienated from the entire world. No one understood what they were going through. So what I'd suggest them, the ones that are going through a divorce, is pair them up with someone who's already been through a divorce to know that it's the buddy system. It's like a mentorship. It's not fun. It's sad, but to actually have somebody to help you go through it and tell you what to expect, tell you, yes, you may have some sleepless nights going through the process. Yes, you're going to be angry at one spouse or the other. And then all the other different steps that you may not even think about, and to anticipate those problems as well. So I explain that in a little bit more detail. So therefore, not to scare anyone away, like I said, I am for marriage, but so that you have all the information in front of you, so you don't just make a gut decision based on a feeling, that you can actually make a logical decision on the partner that you decide to spend the rest of your life with.
I unloaded 32 years of emotion.
This job isn't a joke, and it can hurt you.
How does yoga or meditation help with that?
Coming to terms with who you are.
You know, nobody calls us because they're having a good day.
It's really the suicide that becomes a huge issue.
People are more trustworthy with the dog.
Sleep deprivation helps them either be better or worse.
Completely secretive when we started this.
So it's pretty much taboo.
Take care of the people next to you.
First responders really being open about what they're struggling with.
If we know that, let's raise awareness.
Brings you together to talk about it, and it tells you you're not alone.
Oh, great points, Clee. And, you know, we know people who have stayed in the job well into their 60s only for the sole reason to keep their benefits out of the hands of someone who's they're in the midst of a contentious divorce with. So there's, it's really, you got to look at the big picture.
Yeah. I know there's individuals that, like you said, stay in the profession to avoid having the 401k, the retirement plan, to having to go, or others that refuse to have turned down promotions, that do not work overtime because they don't want that percentage to supplement their income. So therefore, if they are paying child support or alimony, spousal support, then it's based on a lower percentage income and not the higher percentage income. So they basically they're shooting themselves in the foot at work, trying to get, not getting ahead to kind of alleviate a problem that they have. So if you have all the education, you can work as one full unit and have a more enjoyable family life and career.
Yeah, Clee, you've got a lot of wisdom on this. And the way I'm sort of seeing it is you've been through this and you're hoping to alleviate some of this pain or give some guidance and illuminate that pathway so that other first responders can see something and not necessarily just walk into the darkness or expect it to come, yet also have no idea what to do. Mm-hmm. And so much of what we do as first responders is preparing for things that may or may not happen. So I'm mm-hmm. a huge fan of you saying to, you know, understand what it's going to be like to be divorced on the job, even if you're not in that place of turmoil in your relationship, but just to kind of have that tool, that concept of mm-hmm. what could happen. So that way, you know, it can influence your decision making. Mm-hmm. It can also maybe encourage you to put a little bit more effort into the relationship. Mm-hmm. Who knows what the byproduct may be, but what I'm hearing is that the knowledge is way more powerful than just crossing your fingers and hoping, oh, this isn't going to happen to me. I know I'm going to be that one, you know, that smaller statistic of people who make it through without going through a divorce. So yeah. I also like that you are saying to, you know, don't be afraid of marriage. It's still mm-hmm. something that we can do, but mm-hmm.
absolutely,
just be aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It summed it up very eloquently. Absolutely. I give these speeches and I always say at the beginning and the end, I am for marriage 100%. Just know what you're getting into. It's just like if you're going to a car dealer, a car lot, and you see a used clunker on the side, on the back of the car dealership itself, and the dealer's trying to get you to buy this clunker, you're not just going to go in there and buy that car blindly. You're going to go do your inspection and see, oh, this car's, the transmission has about 2 more miles on it before it totally falls out. I want a brand new car. And you know what you want. You know how to do it. You know what guidelines, you know what contract you're going to be signing by the end of the day. And I'm saying the same thing about marriages. Don't just go in and jump into it without at least knowing what could potentially happen or what could be in store for you in the process.
That's a great analogy.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little more, because you touched on this, you know, the ramifications of going through a divorce or a separation, mm-hmm. and you've still got to do the job. So mm-hmm. can we talk to us a little bit about the mental health piece, like what comes into play when you're going through the stress of divorce or separation at the same time doing a stressful job?
Yes. I've seen a lot of guys who've gone through divorces in the middle of a divorce, and they're at work disheveled. They are drinking coffee, energy drinks, just to maintain it through day shift or night shift, whatever shift it is. They're not zeroed in, not focused. They said they had a sleepless night, or they're too concerned about their family. Their kids who they've seen every single day, they only see them now on the weekends or once every other day or whatever it may be. I've seen them go from extreme highs to extreme lows with depression. Some, unfortunately, I've worked with EAP as far as counseling. Not one to say count, listening and referring. And some actually have gone as far as substance abuse, alcohol abuse, a change in personality, a change in demeanor. Unfortunately, and I hate to say it, and I don't like talking about the topic, I've seen a few that actually committed suicide, self-deleted, they didn't want to go through the process. The depression was too bad for them. And it's unfortunate because we all hit rock bottom at something in life. And it's a shame that it has to come be to that for a marriage or the family structure. But we're all able to bounce back. And I would say with counselors, with working on yourself, that is mental health in itself enough. If you're having some sort of substance abuse problem, if you're having anxiety, depression, whatever it is, there's things in place. There's safeguards in place. That sometimes you do have to stick your hand out and ask for help. I know we don't ask for help, but asking for help could be that barrier that saves you. And then I would say for your coworkers as well is recognize when a coworker of yours is actually going through a tough time, you know that they're going through family problems, and assist them in getting the proper help that they deserve and they need, because it's going to weigh on you heavy. I've seen it again, sleepless nights, losing concentration while working, a lot of sick days, call off. It just spirals out of control. It's something that if you want to get nip in the bud early, then it's something that you could come out of a lot faster than not just sitting on your hands and knees and not getting things done.
Now, first responders tend to end up in relationships with each other. Do you think that escalates anything or makes anything worse, harder, anything like that?
That's a good question. I have not seen the first responders that I know that end up in marriages with other first responders, from what I've seen, actually have been worked out very well. I think understanding each other's schedule, understanding the workload, being able to communicate, because we're a tight-knit community anyway. So therefore, you had a tough day at work and you don't even have to go through all the details. You can hit the highlights and your spouse understands basically. And like, I had a tough day. X, Y, and Z happened. I don't feel like talking about the rest, and move on with the rest of your day. And the other person is more understanding from what I've seen. And you guys kind of bounce off of each other. It's from what I've experienced. It's normally a first responder and someone who's not in the community working as a first responder, that they don't understand the correlation of the two. And then the tension begins because you're trying to fix the other one to make the marriage work in a way that both of them can understand. First responders, from my experience, and I could be wrong, they seem to do well in marriages. The kids are 100% on board. That's just from what I've noticed. That's a good question.
The communication piece seems to be the key part there. So clearly in first responder professions, we experience a lot of trauma. Mm-hmm. And when we're experiencing constant trauma or things that maybe we're not classifying as trauma, but to maybe the average person, it might be. So as far as the communication, do you think there's a breakdown when it comes to, you know, a first responder is dealing with stress that's related to death, violence, chaos, mm-hmm. versus, you know, their spouse, their partner is dealing with stress related to things at work that might seem trivial to a first responder? Do you think there's, you know, room for improvement in communication and understanding and empathy when it comes to a first responder understanding how to validate the experiences that a civilian goes mm-hmm. through as having those being real problems?
Yeah, communication is key, period. I absolutely agree. Understanding, I've been guilty of this myself where, okay, I'm out here saving lives. I'm out here kicking in doors and with the task force. I'm having fun. I'm getting bad guys off the street. And then my spouse at the time is out here, you know, the paper, the photocopier jammed up and wasn't able to get all the meeting, the papers stapled together. So the meeting got started late. And then my boss was upset with me and we lost a client. And because of that, I'm going to have to work overtime this weekend to try and rebuild the loss that we had. I'm like, wow, you know, it's such a shame that a catastrophe like that happens. I'm out here saving lives and you got papers that couldn't be stapled. So therefore, our weekend plans of going to the amusement park are going to be shut down because now that you're going to have to work 6 hours on a Saturday because you couldn't work the stapler. Like, come on, really? And I mean, that's a made up situation, but you understand where I'm going with that. Like, yeah, that was a big problem for the spouse, but it wasn't understood. It wasn't dealt with empathetically, like you stated, by the other person. So therefore, it's kind of shoved under the rug as if you're not as important. Your situation isn't as important either. And then it begins, both parties start to shut down. One, the first responder is not getting the respect or lack of respect that they believe that they need from dealing with bad guys. And then wanting to relax on the weekend. Spouse isn't getting the respect or the empathy or the understanding of not being understood on how serious that meeting was. May not be a big deal in everyone else's world, but it's a big deal in their world. And therefore, they start to shut down like, okay, the next time something like this happens, I won't say anything, or let's not plan anything for Sunday because it may happen again. So we'll just play it by ear, and communication then shuts down because both individuals, their temperature has been turned down to lukewarm to cold, and two cold individuals that aren't going to communicate at all.
Yeah. I feel like what you just said is resonating with so many listeners right now. They're like, how have you been a fly on my wall lately? Like, how do you know that so well?
Well, for one, like I said, I'm guilty of being the harsh spouse and believing that my first responder world supersedes everything. And then two, I've grown and matured. And through counseling and coaching, I've seen that it wasn't just me. It's kind of like the ego that you get in the job, and kind of putting that ego to the side and coaching others. And they're like, wow, we really do need to understand. Okay, it's not a big deal to us, but in that moment, make it a big deal. Be present for your spouse for that moment is basically what I would say.
Yeah, that's a critical skill. And I'd love you to speak a little more about the counseling piece, because you touched on sort of a peer support model for someone who's going through a divorce, pairing up with somebody who's been through that and as a support mechanism. But how about counseling? Because you're speaking about critical listening skills, you're talking about empathy. So how does counseling help with that?
Counseling is great. And counseling is what I love. Because with EAP, I can listen and refer. I can pass it on. But seriously, normally listening to someone is the gateway. That's the heart. It's cracking the egg of the shell of the egg, and getting that person to open up. Getting that person to open up, getting them to talk, getting them to express their feelings, their thoughts, their emotions, getting that out is where the therapy is. I've done that in coaching. I've done that passing the buck on to an actual certified counselor. And I think that, again, working, getting that information, getting those thoughts out and working on yourself, doing self-actualization processes, drills, gets you to the point where you can actually deal with who you are and who and how you come off to other people. I went through counseling in the middle of my divorce many years ago. I think it was about how many years? Going on 7 or 8 years now. I'm an old man. And I was very stigmatized on, I don't need a counselor. I remember a church pastor tried to sit us down. I didn't want to go. I was very defiant. I didn't want to do any of it because I did not need to. I was strong-minded. I was strong-willed. And eventually it's going to fix itself because it has to fix itself, or so I thought. When I went through counseling, it was the best thing that I've ever done. I was upset with myself because I didn't go sooner. To unload those thoughts, to unload those feelings and emotions, to actually have someone not judge you, to actually listen and give advice, proper advice and steps on how to make the recovery is paramount. I think, especially as first responders, it should be mandated, honestly. I don't know, quarterly, yearly, or some sort of counseling therapy should be issued to us, not when something bad happens, but kind of maintenance to keep the brain going. Because if the brain starts getting cloudy, then the body's going to fall apart.
I love what you said, talking about your own work, like self-work, because it's the second time you've mentioned it now, which tells me how important it is to you and how much you value it. But you also mentioned how you were strong-minded, and so you were resistant to therapy. So how are you able to kind of break away from that identity of saying I'm strong, yet I need to put in more work, you know, because I think there's a roadblock for people who identify mm-hmm. as strong, who identify as the individual who can do it themselves. And it prevents them from seeing what growth can be made through things such as counseling.
It's a good question. I normally coach males who have been involved in some sort of athletics or sports or weight training. And so therefore I can use the analogy, you know, you're only as strong as your spotter. And so once you get down and start pumping out reps doing bench presses, you know, you maxed out for the day. You got on whatever the maximum amount of weight that you have on. That's the world. And you're pushing that thing up. You're dealing with that problem until you get to that one where you can't even break the plane. And if you're just dealing with it by yourself, you're going to hold it right there until the weight starts becoming too unbearable, where it's going to come down and crush you on the chest, and then you're done. So therefore, you need the spotter. The spotter is the person that's going to come in and counsel you. Yes, you need that help to help lift the bar up and put it back on the rack. And that's the same thing that you go through when you go through counsel, when you actually decide, yes, I can't do the bench press all by myself. I need a spotter. Yes, you need to be humble enough to ask for a spotter. And once I give that kind of analogy, like, yeah, that makes sense. It's that simple.
That's phenomenal.
I love that analogy. That's really powerful.
Come on.
Check it.
Let's continue on the thread that we were on a few minutes ago, and that's the family and the ripple mm-hmm. effect, because it's not just the spouse that's going to be affected and the first responder that's going to be affected, but if there's kids in the equation, they're affected as well. So what do we need to know about the ripple effect on divorce or separation or marriage problems, how that's going to play out with the family dynamics?
So if a divorce does happen and there's children involved, unfortunately, they become collateral damage throughout the whole process. Mommy and daddy is going to be at war with each other, whether they're getting along or whether they're at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. Either way, more than likely, one of the parents are going to have to move out of the house that the kids know as both mommy and daddy's house. The other parent's going to get another house, townhouse, apartment, live with someone else, wherever it may be. Then the kids become backpack children, where they're going to be there for the weekend. They're going to be there for a week, and 1 week here, 1 week there, and so many different things. I remember when I hated it for my son when he was younger and we went through it, because unfair to him. He'd spend 1 week at one house, 1 week at another house, and he'd get so confused when he had a science project. He's like, I forget where I put this folder. I forget. Mm-hmm. We have to go back over to mommy's house to get my folder so I could finish this project. And I'm coming down like, come on, you got to remember everything. You know I'm coming at this time. And it's unfair to him. He's got to have a separate set of clothes. He's got to catch a different set of buses to the school or get dropped off at different times. Different households have different schedules, different rules and regulations. And then they have to be able to adapt just like that. And have to be able to adapt to two parents that probably aren't getting along. So the two parents are either going to be arguing anytime they see each other or non-communicative, which is going to be a huge stressor on the child, because the child's going to be, what did I do to deserve any of this? And it's just not going to go well. Some children turn defiant. Some actually learn how to cope with it until the parents can come together and have some sort of realization or agreement. For that, then once the agreement is in place, okay, the child will remain here at this house for the remainder of the school year, then the summers with the other parent, and then the family court's going to issue a certain amount of percentage on child support on whichever the parent becomes the custodial parent. And so the child's used as a pawn as well between the two parents for either more money or less money. It becomes it's a dirty game. It becomes a dirty game, and children become the victim in that dirty game, and it's unfortunate to them. I've seen it. I've gone through it. I've seen it, and I continue to see it, and it's just not fun at all for the child.
I like the great grace that you have for your son going through this, rather than taking the approach of just suck it up. So many other kids go through divorce. Like, this is what you should just get along with and realize this is your life. You know, you're having a lot of grace for saying that's not fair for him. And you're realizing the implications that this can have on him as he continues to grow older, because it's just, it is life for him now, but you're you're being supportive of him through that. So I personally think that's amazing. Do you think responding to domestics in or any type of conflict involving kids or families as a first responder has given you any more perspective to bring to your own experience with divorce, or how kids are enduring divorcing parents? How that's impacted your perspective on what your son's going through, and also how to respond as a father?
I counsel more people on domestic calls than I did before. When you actually go through something, you get a knowledge base for it. And so therefore, when I'm able, when domestic is actually calming to a level where the both parties are able to listen and not just be angry and just try and talk over me, I explain different levels of where it's at, different situations, where we're at, where it can go, where things may be going, suggest alternative plans, suggest alternative kind of mentors or counseling that's available to them. And there's many agencies in our local area here that are available to parents and children as well, who are going through a tough time. And we all know that it seems like everyone's going through a tough time. The economy is not where it needs to be. So therefore, it's causing a lot of strain on some of our citizens as well. Counseling them, being able to listen, being able to give them solutions to the problem, and actually counseling other officers that I know, and being there, a listening ear for my son when, the simplest things I may think are very simple for me, but are a big deal for him, and being there in that moment for when he feels comfortable enough to explain certain situations.
It's a beautiful skill that you're bringing out there through the job out into the street and into the home. So I applaud you for that. As we wrap up, Clee, any other thoughts on this topic that we didn't cover?
I think we hit covered all bases, everything that I can think of. Like I say, I am not I am against divorce. I am for marriage, but I understand divorce as well. And just know what you're getting into before you actually sign the marriage contract for a commitment that you're going to be expected to make your entire life.
Do your due diligence.
Yes.
Laura, any closing thoughts or questions?
I just want to share how much I think it's truly admirable that you are speaking on this topic rather than holding it close to your chest and not doing anything with it. You're here today talking about it so others can benefit from it. You're influencing those in your community. You're also influencing your brothers and sisters that you work alongside. And better yet, you're looking continuously for growth by how can I improve and how can I continuously be that optimal father role for my son. And I just completely find it admirable.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And thank you guys for both having me on your show. I truly appreciate you guys taking out time to just pick my brain and getting this information out here.
Well, it's an important topic and we have not covered it before. So thank you for shedding a light on it. And before we do close, where can people find you out there, Clee? I know you're doing a lot of stuff. You're coaching. You got your podcast and radio show. And so tell us about where we can find it and what you're up to.
I stream weekly on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook under either Black and Blue, like you see behind me, Klee Tillman or Coach Klee, depending on which platform it is. Each platform was created very different during different years. That's why. My website, workwithklee.com, will be the funnel to find all that, along with the five books that I've published through One Way Publishing, with self-help books, books to help you find your breakthrough, to help you get through, get over your once you hit rock bottom and to build you back up. I'm sorry. If you have mistakes, grudges, anger, anxiety, toxic situations, tell you how to alleviate those things. The podcast goes live weekly at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I go live with a guest, a first responder, or an individual law enforcement, whether they're rookie, seasoned, or retiree, and we discuss their trainings, businesses, or publications in an effort to humanize the badge and try and get that information out there. So thank you for giving me the platform to get that shout out there. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, Klee, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and wish you continued success doing all these projects that you're doing and spreading the word and being out there as a positive force in the world. So
thank you. Thank you.
And Laura, thank you so much for being a guest co-host. It was a lot of fun, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yep, I enjoyed it. And Klee, you got my full support. Keep on charging that hill and doing wonderful things.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to you both. You guys, I'm looking to watch you guys flourish as well. So you guys keep up the good work.
Thank you. Remember to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.